session number 10247, reel 4.
Mr. Pomeroy, reel 4.
Correct. Finally, the underground leaders of the movement arranged for me to go outside, as they described it, to go out into the areas where the Hook armed forces were operating. I first made a trip to southern Luzon, and I was accompanied by my wife, Celia, who became my wife. She was my escort. We went to southern Luzon to the Sierra Madre Mountains in the province of Laguna and Quezon. And there I met the leaders of the movement who had been throughout the Japanese occupation operating there and then were still operating there. And I managed to get extensive interviews from them. I was out there for several weeks staying with them and moving from place to place in the mountains. Then I went back to the city, and eventually another arrangement was made for me to go up into central Luzon, and I had another escort who took me up to central Luzon, and I met the Hook commanders of almost the entire movement in central Luzon. And some of them were based on this Mount Arayat in the center of the central Luzon plain. Others were in the swamps which existed in the border of Pampanga and Bulacan province. And others I met in other parts of central Luzon. I traveled around a bit there. Rather difficult business, because we have to pass through all kinds of military checkpoints to get to the jumping-off place where we finally came into contact with the Hooks. And I met them in a barrio there in Pampanga, and they took me at night across the rice fields, which were covered with water at the time, and the early growing rice plants were just planted. And through this very difficult terrain up to the Mount Arayat. It was very, very hard for me because I had not been used to this kind of life, and I found it very difficult to, especially at night, to move across rice fields and rice terraces and so on to get to the mountains, and then to climb the mountains and wander around there and go through the jungles and the swamps. And very, very arduous. But nevertheless, I did that and managed to meet a great many of the Hook leaders. And I got my material that way.
How much suspicion did you meet with amongst the Hooks or the CP leadership there?
No suspicion. For one thing, when I reached the field, my wife later told me that when I first got in contact with the leaders of the movement, of course they wanted to check up on me. They might suspect me of being anything, an American agent of any kind. And, I came there on my own without anybody's authority. I was in the American Party in the United States at that time, and I told the American Party I was going to the Philippines, and they sort of gave me a leave of absence from party work to go. And what the Philippine Commerce did was to get in contact with some of the American Party members whom they had met in the course of the war. There were a lot of them in the Philippines, in the American Army, who also got in touch with the Hooks. And they got in touch with these people and asked them to check on me and to find out whether I was authentic. And the word finally came back that I was all right. And so they accepted me.
What impression did you get of Hook organization in the Philippines once you'd re-established contact with them in 1947 as compared with what you'd seen earlier?
Well, I was very much impressed by it. I became much better acquainted with the movement in the post-war period than during the wartime. I had not so much opportunity when I was in the Army because I had Army work to do. But in the post-war period, I was able to give my total attention to learning about this movement. I was very much impressed. Especially I was impressed by the guerrilla force that had been built and the extent to which it was accepted by and supported by the people. I was able to go to many villages in the course of these travels around central Luzon, and the overwhelming support they had from the total support, I would say, from people.
Could we enlarge on this? Because one of the impressions that's always given with guerrilla movements, resistance movements, by the authority books and so on that are written about it, is that they get their support because essentially they've got the force by means of terror, is how it's depicted, that a man sort of arrives in the night and says, you've got to make a contribution to the movement in terms of food and so on. What's your own comment about that kind of picture that's drawn?
I would say that such a thing possibly happens under some guerrilla circumstances. I would even say that in some circumstances in the Philippines, especially in the later expansion areas of the Hook movement, that I will explain later, some people would be afraid by the possession of guns, you see. They would cooperate because they weren't able to do anything else. But the people I met in Central Luzon were not like that. They were absolutely committed to their support for the movement. You see, during the Japanese occupation, the anti-Japanese struggle was not simply a matter of armed men fighting the Japanese. What the Hook movement did, and this is the thing that the Americans especially didn't like, was to organize the people on a political basis. And in all of the barrios, that is the villages, you know, of Central Luzon where the Hooks operated, there were local self-governing councils set up. See, there was a vacuum of political leadership throughout all these areas during the war because, the Japanese took over and destroyed the whole previous political system. And what the Hooks did was to build a political system in the towns and villages, which was run by the people themselves. These were called Barrio United Defense Corps, BUDC they were called. And they had a complete array of local officers covering all aspects of life in the barrio. Everything from production in the fields down to sanitation in the houses was covered by the local councils, you know, and the people elected their own officers and ran their own affairs. So they liked this very much. It's something they never had before, even in the previous times. And in other words, what the Hooks did, they introduced democracy to the people in the Central Luzon during the war. And the people wanted it and liked it very much. And that's why they supported the Hooks.
What happened to the landlord families?
Well, some of the landlords in Central Luzon cooperated with the Hooks in a united front arrangement. I met some of them in a post-war period. They were still pro-Hook, but they were landlords. But the bulk of the landlords left Central Luzon during the wartime. They simply evacuated. Most of them collaborated with the Japanese. They went to Manila to live during the war. And they were unable to get their share of the harvest during the war. The people kept the harvest. Landlords didn't even put in an appearance. They were afraid. That's why after the war they were extremely vicious toward the peasants because they had been denied their profits during the wartime, you know. But in general during the war you had a cleansing of the whole area of such elements so the people could operate on their own without fear of any interference by the landlords or any abuse by the landlords. A totally different situation existed after the war when the landlord authority was reestablished.
Was the church operating when you was the church operating in these areas when you arrived in 47?
The church was not a factor, I would say, in the situation in Central Luzon during this time.
They were neutral, were they?
Neutral, I would say, yes. I don't know of any church activity during the Japanese period. I'm not acquainted with any.
Now, I interrupted your narrative. If we could pick it up, please.
Where were we in the narrative? Well, after I had gone to various outside, where they put it, to various parts of the Philippines to interview Hook and party leaders, I had all the material I needed for writing a book. Incidentally, they also provided me with the literature that had been produced by the movement during the wartime, the newspapers and the documents that the movement used, so I had an abundance of material to use. And I went back to Manila and wrote a book. Now, I had a problem because I had no means of making a living, and I didn't have any money, literally no money. I went out to the Philippines with my pockets empty, literally, and the movement helped me to some extent. And then I met Celia Mariano, who was the woman I married. I asked her to marry me. We were married finally in 1948, in May of 1948. But my wife was wanted by the authorities. She was living underground. She had immediate post-war period. The movement had tried to send her to the United States for contact with the left people in the U.S. And the American embassy had rejected her visa application because they knew about her Hook wartime record. So she was persona non grata there. And our marriage was an underground marriage. You know, normally American citizens are supposed to receive, to get authorization papers from the American embassy in order to marry a Filipina. And you can't get a marriage certificate normally in the Philippines unless you have this sort of authorization. But I wouldn't want to pass through that arrangement because my wife was known to the Americans and also to the Philippine authorities. So we did it in an underground way in the sense of some Hook friends of ours who had friendly relations with the local mayor of an adjoining town arranged for the mayor to marry us without the necessary American authorization. So we managed to get married. But I had a problem about how to make a living. I began to write for the Philippine magazines and newspapers, and mainly short stories. And I contributed a lot of short stories to the main leading Philippine magazine, the national magazine, called Philippine Free Press, it was called. And well, that provided me with some income, but not a great deal. And I finally decided to go back to school and study at the University of the Philippines. I could do so under a piece of American legislation called the GI Bill of Rights, which was adopted after the war, which enabled American veterans to study with subsidies from American government. They provided me with a living allowance while studying, as well as paying all expenses of studying. And I decided to go to the University of the Philippines under this arrangement, which gave me an income. I could live in the Philippines, you see. So we used this way of living, and my wife and I both went to work in the underground movement in the city of Manila. The party there assigned us to do educational and propaganda work. And so that's what I was doing.
What exactly about. Did that involve?
Well, it involved producing leaflets and other propaganda. It involved writing articles for the press under various names, which put the ideas and the position of the movement forward. It involved holding study groups and classes, what we call them, of people in the underground. My wife especially did a lot of that work. And then I was writing this book, which was the movement recognized as useful. So I wrote this book. It was eventually, I finally decided because of the security problem of my living in the Philippines to write a book, not in my name, but was written as the autobiography of one of the Hook leader is named Louis Taruk.
How do you spell his name?
T-A-R-U-C. Louis Taruk. He was the commander-in-chief of the Hook Balahap during the wartime and also of the reorganized Hook forces in the immediate post-war period. And he's one of the men I interviewed extensively, and I decided to write the book around him because he's rather a charismatic figure. And this book was eventually published under the title Born of the People. I'll show you a copy later if you want. It was published in the United States, but sometime later, not immediately. But while we were living in Manila between 1948 and 1950, the situation of the Philippine government deteriorated severely because it was a very corrupt government, a very abusive government that lost the support of people and the sympathy of people. And the Hook movement became extremely strong during this period and began to expand from central Luzon into all directions, into other provinces of the country. And from about an original five or six provinces that eventually expanded into 27 or 28 provinces, not only on Luzon, but also in other islands of the Philippines. With this development began to grow between 1948 and 1950. From a defensive position initially, the movement gradually moved to an offensive against the government. And in the latter part of 1949, there was an election that took place that was extremely corrupt and caused widespread resentment in the whole country. And the movement decided that this was the time to really launch an offensive struggle. And in January 1950, it was announced that there was a revolutionary situation in the country, that the time for the people to take power was approaching and so on. An offensive general was launched. And because the movement was then expanding and there was a need to develop more and more cadres for the movement, my wife and I were assigned to leave Manila and go into the mountains to mainly for the purpose of building a school system for the movement and for intensifying propaganda work.
Could I just ask a question here about this? Because it's often depicted in anti-communist writings about Southeast and South Asia in the late 1940s, that because there was a rough coincidence in time between the Hook movement in the Philippines engaging in armed struggle and the communist movement in Malaya, and also developments in India as well at that time when there was a change of party line. It's often depicted in anti-communist writings that there was some kind of international directive to Asian communist parties at this time from the Cominform to adopt offensive tactics.
Yes, I know. I've heard that story. There's a claim that there was even a meeting of parties held in India, and I think in 1948, at which these directives were delivered. This is totally untrue. There was no such meeting ever held. I've done as much research as possible on this to discover what actually took place. There was no such meeting ever held. No such directive was ever made. And certainly the Philippine Communist Party never received any. And incidentally, the Philippine Communist Party had been a member of the Comintern in the 1930s and had close ties with other brother parties at this time. But these were severed during the wartime conditions and were not resumed after the war. The Philippine Party was totally isolated from the international communist movement in the post-war period, and had no... its armed struggle was conducted totally on its own without any link of any kind with other parties outside. except to some extent with the Chinese. That deserves a separate discussion, because it was the Chinese party organization in the Philippines that had been there for decades, and it also cooperated with the Hook struggle against the Japanese. There was even a separate Chinese squadron which operated within the Hook movement. So there was a tenuous link with the Chinese as a result of this. But even this was cut during the course of the post-war period. So there was no link whatsoever, and the party was entirely on its own, and its strategy and tactics were totally worked out on its own.
How did you feel about being redirected towards this new kind of work?
I mean, compared with my past life?
Compared with the kind of work you've been doing in Manila.
Oh, I see. I mean, going out to the mountains?
Yes.
Well, my wife and I felt that it was necessary, that the movement needed this. You know, I had been studying, I was still in my mid-career of university studies. I had only been in the University of the Philippines for a couple of years. I had very good relations with the Philippine press. My short stories were being published widely, and I had even a national reputation in the country as a short story writer. And the magazine I was writing for even had offered me the job of associate editor of the magazine, and I had excellent prospects for living in the country. And all of these I simply threw aside and took the party assignment to go outside. And my wife and I were living in a house in Manila. When we took our assignment to go outside, we didn't even tell the owner of the house we were leaving. We simply locked the door and left the furniture and our possessions and everything and went to the mountains like that, carrying a handbag full of possessions. That's we were completely devoted to the movement and ready to accept any kind of difficulty or sacrifice. We believed we were going to win.
What's happened? Can you tell me what happened next?
Well, we were in the mountains between... We went to the mountains in April 1950 with this assignment. And we were there for 2 years until April of 1952. And we moved around from one campsite to another for those whole 2 years. The guerrilla life is a mobile life. We have to keep moving because the enemy forces were constantly trying to find us and were constantly trying to attack our areas of base. So we were constantly moving about. We would stay in one campsite no more than a very few months, and then we would have to move on. And we managed to conduct our schools, our classes. We had our mimeograph machines and equipment in the mountains for turning out propaganda. I wrote dozens of pamphlets and leaflets and documents which were for propaganda distribution. Unfortunately, I have none of that anymore. I have no means of getting it. And we were successful in educating or training a lot of people. But over a period of time, you see, we went into the mountains in April of 1950. In September of that year, a disastrous incident occurred. The whole leadership of the movement, the secretariat of the party, and a lot of the Central Committee people were based in Manila and maintaining their headquarters there. And military intelligence raided all of the houses where people were staying and were successful in arresting the whole leadership of the movement. At a very critical time when the party was taking the offensive, and it caused a interruption in the leadership of the struggle, which was rather disastrous for us. And we were outside in the mountains at this time, and And then also the American army really controlled the Philippine army in this period. There's a special military assistance agreement with the Philippines, which is still in existence, and an American military advisory group in the Philippines really has directed the Philippine army, and they directed operations against the Hook movement, and a vast amount of American military assistance was poured into the Philippines to assist the Philippine government to cope with the Hook movement. And the offensive taken by the Hooks was unsuccessful, and the Philippine army eventually managed to take the offensive and put us in a very serious situation. We were constantly being harassed, and our people began to be killed in large numbers, and we lost so many people that the movement became weakened over a period of time. But it also put us in the situation of being constantly trying to evade capture or attack by the enemy, so it meant moving around the Philippines a lot. We initially went outside to southern Luzon, to the mountains in southern Luzon, and eventually we had to move through the mountains all the way up into central Luzon in the course of these army operations. Eventually, in April of 1952, the camp that my wife and I were staying in was raided by the army in a surprise attack, and both of us were captured. I was captured first, and my wife a few days later as a result of this operation.
Now, I know you've written in detail about this in one of your books,
yes.
The Forest, but if I could ask you one or two questions about this 50-52 period. First of all, why was it that you were assigned to this kind of work? Was it because of your experience with propaganda and writing, or was it because of your experience of the American military, or both?
Well, it was both. The movement didn't have a great many writers with it, and they needed people to do propaganda work, and I was prepared to do it. But also, during our schools, I wrote a textbook on military strategy and tactics, and this was used in our schools, and I taught the subject, in fact, in the party schools. But that doesn't mean that I had any kind of superior experience or ability in the movement. The Philippine Hook movement had a great many very skillful and capable military people who taught me. I wasn't teaching them; they were teaching me more than anything else. It was an exchange of ideas, rather, I would say, rather than one teaching the other.
Can you tell me about the indigenous people who lived in the forest, the non-Filipino people, and to what extent what was their attitude towards the struggle that was taking place?
Yeah, well, in the Philippine mountain areas all over the country and many of the islands, there are primitive peoples. In southern Luzon, there aren't any, as far as I know. We didn't encounter any. But but throughout central Luzon, up through the mountain areas, there are a great many very primitive peoples. I don't know what age of development you would call them, but they're very, very primitive, living by a semi-nomadic existence and living by hunting and by maintaining little production patches in the forest and so on.